This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
We all love to treat ourselves every now and then, right? Like go out and buy a nice coffee, maybe get a little extra legroom on the plane. Then why are we always settling for doctors? Your health is the most important thing. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You know how I feel about making phone calls, and that is why I discovered ZocDoc many years ago before I even had a podcast. And so I'm thrilled. This feels very full circle. I use ZocDoc all the time in LA. I still use them here in Cincinnati. It's just such a cool service to be able to put in your insurance and find a doctor for whatever your ailment might be. I actually found an ENT doctor once when I had this sinus infection, probably TMI. But anyway, I love ZocDoc. I've loved it for years. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's how easy it is. Sometimes they even have same day appointments. I know I've gotten some in the past. Go to ZocDoc.com/drink and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/drink. ZocDoc.com/drink. Hey, Em.
Hello. Happy New Year. Happy New Decade.
It's 2020.
We said this in the last episode, but now it's actually 2020.
Yeah. Well, we did also our listener episode for the first of the year, but now
right.
This is our first real episode of the year.
Anyway.
Oh, no, it's not.
Well,
never mind.
This is the first one we're recording in 2020. That's for sure.
That's true.
Hi, kids. Can't wait to see you.
Well,
text me when you're home.
Speaking of which, I would like to introduce a new member of the And That's Why I Drink family. I'm not pregnant.
Ooh, oh, my God.
This is Skylar.
Skylar. Here's the thing about Skylar. Okay, I wasn't going to mention Skylar, but if you want me to roast the shit out of you publicly.
Do you think my dad just fainted? Should I call an ambulance? My dad probably just had a heart attack.
I think he's about to when he finds out who Skylar
is. Well, okay, maybe he's.
So yeah. Here's the thing. I've mentioned the Skylight and Christine's in our studio a few times because.
I like how you said Christine's spare room. I mean, our studio.
So there's a skylight in here, and usually when we start the way that we're set up, or the way it used to be set up, is I would sit right under the skylight, so when dusk happened and the sun was starting to set, it was always in my eyes. It was very painful. Nowadays, the new thing about the skylight is, for like, how long have you lived here now, Christine?
2.5 years.
2.5 years. She has never once cleaned the skylight.
Well, what the fuck am I supposed to do? Clean a skylight in the spare room?
It's kind of hard to get to, but that means
you know why I don't clean the goddamn skylight? Because you show up here with confetti cannons and then walk out the door and say, good luck cleaning all that.
I'm surprised there isn't confetti in the dust collector.
Oh,
up there.
I'm sure there is.
So this skylight is really just gnarly. There's a spider web that's been growing for 2.5 years.
Well,
and every time, it used to be like a little spider web, and I was like, oh, there's something there. One day she'll dust it. And then it got bigger and bigger, and I was like, I don't think she's ever going to dust it. And then one day I mentioned it to her, and she was like, oh, I've never noticed that now that I'm sitting in this direction. It's pretty wild.
And then since then, I've grown attached to it.
And so now we were saying, what if there's a little spider up there? And Christine was like, surely there is. And I was like, we should just clean that. She was like, no, I named the spider. And I was like, you have? What on earth is a spider? Skylar, because the skylight. So,
but it didn't occur to me. I just screamed.
She
Skylar.
Literally screamed the name Skylar, hoping it would land, and it worked.
You were threatening to get rid of my pet, and then I was like, "Well, he has a name." And you were like, "Well, what is it?" And
I don't even know if the Skylar's the spider or Skylar's the whole web.
Well, M named the web Deb, so that's a whole different.
Skylar the spider and Deb the web, but
Deborah the webber does.
But as a whole unit, I think we just refer to the skylight space as Skylar's spot now. So,
yeah, this is Skylar's room.
This is definitely Skylar's room.
And I'm not pregnant, to clarify once again.
So apparently, we are really just building up quite the collection. One day someone's going to give us, like, an abstract collage of random creatures that we've taken in.
Like now, because, you know, it says that all mummified fruits and all furry pets.
And yeah, to be clear, I'm not a spider fan. For people who are wondering if I'm, like, into, like, spiders.
Who in the world is wondering if you're into spiders?
Because my stepsister's like, she has like two tarantulas and stuff. There are spider people out there. I'm not one of them.
I'm not either, but I just named this one.
Skylar, also, the reason I love Skylar currently is because I've never once seen Skylar. If I see a spider come out of that damn thing, I'm going to lose my mind.
I think that's scarier because you're like, where is he?
He's the invisible man.
Behind you? Maybe.
Anyway. So there's Skylar.
That's our new friend, Skylar. And I do love that I'm like one of those, I just like collect creatures.
Dust? Oh, yeah.
And dust and dirt. Because I was listening to some old episodes recently. Don't ask me why I've been in a weird headspace. And I listened to some old episodes. And I happened to listen to two of the ones where I saved bugs. I'm sure there were many more. But two of the ones where I saved bugs. And the first one, I was crying because I was in the kitchen, like, and you were like, Christine, just throw it in the trash. And it was episode, I don't know, really early,
like negative five,
and you kept saying throw it away, and I was like, I have to dry his wings off first. You were like, it's a gnat.
It's revolting to me. I like, I'm also not a bug person. If you don't have,
I'm not either. Like, I don't enjoy having insects. Well, I do have Skylar, so I can't talk.
I
take it all back. So,
but anyway, so, and then also the grossest part was, as we were talking about Skylar, we were like so happy, and then all of a sudden, like, a draft came through, and the web started waving.
Deb was waving to us.
It was rippling, and so we were like, oh look, Skylar's waving. And then we just started waving to the web. We're 27 and 28 years old, and there's no children here. We're trying to like play make believe with. We legitimately waved at a spider
like
web.
We weren't doing it as a joke. We were waving just to hello. And then it stopped waving. We were like, why won't it wave back anymore? Like real crazy,
like,
people,
like, we pissed Skylar off. Anyway, it's getting bananas.
I don't know why this is happening.
Happy new decade. Nothing's changed. New year, old me.
As you can tell, we've grown a lot as people.
Right. So
how are you doing?
I'm okay. I haven't spoken on here since I was home. I went to Virginia. That was fun.
Oh God, a lot has happened.
I went to, what'd you do for New Year's, Christine?
I stayed home by myself with Skylar.
Yeah, with Skylar.
And I had actually four animals in the house, and I guess five if you include Skylar. And I did a little Ask Me Anything for my close friends. And at first I didn't think anyone was responding because I didn't know how to check the answers. And so for half an hour, I was like, I am the biggest loser on the planet. It's New Year's Eve.
What kind of cocky asshole do I think I am?
I'm like, hey, guys, let's hang out. And no one's responding. But there were a lot of people chatting with me. So I had fun. What about you?
I was in Richmond with Deirdre and all my hometown friends.
You went to a Roaring Twenties.
I did. We had reserved early on a club. There was like a bar club lounge place that was decked out to, apparently we were all supposed to dress like we were from the 20s.
You did have suspenders.
I had suspenders. I actually had a costume change only in the suspenders. I had two suspenders.
Wow.
I had a classic 1920s black pair. And then that was during pre-gaming. Mm-hmm. And then when we went out, I had neon green light up LED suspenders. So there was a costume change. But the pregame was very fun. I learned a playlist that introduced to Christine.
We had a birthday party for Blaze that I told you guys about, but it was not a surprise party because I realized pretty quickly Blaze hates surprises. So I was like, I'm just going to tell him about his party. It was fun, though.
It was a blast.
Thank you for
Christine
coming.
Had what? Fun. What? Christine had a lot of fun what? At that party?
Nope.
Christine let her freak flag fly.
Oh, we can put it that way. I kept whispering things, apparently. I don't know.
First of all, by the way, the playlist that we were listening to, it was 1920s music, but remixed for now. That was a Deirdre recommendation.
It was pretty cool. Allison did the Charleston.
My fucking girlfriend can do the Charleston.
It was pretty wild.
It's bananas.
My fucking ex-roommate can do the Charleston. Can you believe it?
Okay. Well, also, anyway, for this party, Allison and I were, I think, the first to arrive, and then we were the last to leave. And once we were the last to leave, Christine had a little wine. And I guess she hadn't had a lot of wine recently, it hit her.
It actually was not wine. It was my brand new invention.
Wasn't it like a combination of everything you owned?
I made my own jungle juice.
It was like the kitchen sink. It was awful.
I made jungle juice, and then I kept running out of...
Not that I tasted it. It looked awful.
The bowl was so large because I went to Party City, and I bought the largest bowl they had, thinking, oh, this will fit my punch. And then I put all the ingredients in, and I went, oh my God, it's like an eighth full. And I'd gone to Costco and bought like the giant 2-liter vodka. So I just put the entire thing in there and it finally filled up.
Glug, glug.
So it was delicious.
And the party went on. And so Allison and I were the last ones. And Christine was like, oh, I totally forgot to like bring out Blaze's ice cream cake earlier. So like everyone's gone, but like the four of us are here. And I was like, well, I guess we're eating some ice cream cake.
I guess so.
And Christine was holy shit drunk.
No, I wasn't.
No, you weren't. You were holy shit tipsy.
I don't remember it. You were. I must have been.
You weren't sober. You were not sober.
I haven't had that much drink in a very long time.
But you were like fun, Christine. Like there wasn't a bad version. Like you were in the good zone.
And misses me when I was.
I love drunk Christine. And there's no one I love more on earth than drunk Blaze. And they were. When they're drunk together, it's a powerhouse.
Oh, dear God, help us.
And they were both drunk. I was having such a blast. I was like, Allison, we cannot leave. I don't know when I'll get this again.
I was so glad you were still there because Blaze's brother went to bed in the adjoining room 5 feet over. And I was like, thank God you guys are here.
No, I had a blast. And then no one except me and Allison wanted to eat the cake. So Allison and I basically ate a whole Carvel cake.
I was eating that because I found frosting down my neck the next morning.
I have videos on my phone of Christine. Literally, I'm not kidding, Christine. You put your entire face in the cake.
No, I didn't.
Do you want the video?
No, I don't want the video.
You had your whole face in the cake. And
apparently,
then
there's videos.
She shoved her face in the cake and then she tried to lick her own face, but she couldn't reach any of it because she was trying to lick her fucking face. And then her hands were covered in like the blue Carvel stuff, her nose. She had a big blotch on her face.
And then I started whispering.
And then she started whispering things.
I woke up the next morning and thought, I was whispering in Allison's ear. I have no idea what I was saying.
She was trying to play telephone by herself. Nobody else was
because
playing.
Because it's my favorite game.
But she would whisper things, hoping the rest would announce things.
But so I telephoned by myself.
Apparently, she whispered to Allison that Zach Bagans, Robert the Doll, and Peggy the Doll all hate me. Like, why would you say that?
I like that that's my subconscious.
I haven't even done anything mean.
My subconscious thoughts are like, let's bully you.
If drunk words are sober thoughts, you have some weird ass thoughts. Well, also,
are we surprised? No.
So then at the end, like everyone else was done eating cake and I was like, all right, free for all. Like, I'm going to eat the shit out of this cake.
Oh my.
And
oh, no.
I started like digging in and I guess Christine, without saying anything, like, no, didn't say like, oh, you're done with that. She picked it up as I had like my fork in the cake. She picks it up and she's like, Blaze, what are we going to do with this cake? And she's holding it and swaying and she flips the whole cake upside down right onto me. It was
that part I do remember. I suddenly sobered up real quick because I remember
I just looked at
it
and I was like, that should be in my fucking mouth and it's in my lap.
Do you know why I remember? Because your eyes, when I pulled the cake away from your fork, your eyes darkened to a point that I had never seen in my life. And I remember
don't
the fear.
Fuck with my food.
The fear just, and then, so of course I wobbled and then, oh dear. It,
the whole thing, imagine one like sheet cake of Carvel ice cream cake.
Oh no.
And like, it's half eaten, mostly by me. And I'm not done and my fork is in there. She rips it away while the fork is in the cake
for no goddamn reason,
for no reason, just to hold it, and then flipped it upside down. And then she tried to pick it up, but she forgot that it's literally just sitting on a cardboard slat. So she tried to pick it up by literally just picking up the cardboard part and throwing that away. And now there's just all this cake on a table that I can't eat anymore.
And then I was like, you can still eat it. And you were like, I'm not eating that.
I was like, I don't want any part of that anymore, Christine.
So anyway.
And I had just, by the way, I just cleaned her entire house. And then she threw an entire fucking cake across the kitchen.
Yeah, so Blaze is 30 now. Welcome to this life. Thank you, Em, for being the best party,
take me out.
Party
okay.
guest ever.
Anyway.
I also wanted to announce that this has been driving me crazy. I pronounced Sisyphean wrong. I'm sorry. I'm really upset about it. It's
Sisyphean.
Sisyphean, not Sisyphusian or whatever the fuck I was saying.
I like your way better.
Thank you. It's a lot more syllables.
She sells seashells down by the seashore.
Sisyphusian.
Sisyphusian.
So Sisyphean is the right word. I'm sorry about that. Nobody even corrected me unless Eva just really, she probably shields me from that.
Good for
her. She knows I'm a little baby. Also, our patron of the week is Devin Garcia. Who
thank
has
you, Devin.
Also been a patron for a really long time.
Wow.
So
bless you, Devin. Sorry.
One other note, San Antonio, we're coming to you soon, and you're the only show in January that hasn't sold out, so come
please
on.
Sell out. Please, please, please. We would love to sell out the first month. We'd love to sell out the whole show, but let's be realistic. Let's sell out the whole month at least.
Can you, guys, can you just pretend like it's like that thing that you have with Austin, Texas, where you compare tacos?
Can you find, like, whoever your rival is, pretend that they already bought out all of our
That's
tickets.
That's what I'm saying. Austin bought all the tickets, and they have a rivalry about tacos, so can you pretend, can you play that into the buying the tickets? Listen,
yeah, please, please buy tickets.
Makes sense in my head, but
it would make us, it would make us feel
very good.
Whoever
has the best sold out, better sold out, whoever has the sold out show has the better tacos. Let's put it that way.
Okay, there you go.
So buy tickets. A lot of shows still have tickets, so please buy them.
And thank you to the people who've already bought tickets. We're excited to see you.
Yes, thank you for the people who already bought tickets.
I burped. I tried to cover it up.
Cute.
It didn't work.
Also, because people won't stop tagging me in this, that came out wrong. I didn't mean it to sound so aggressive. But it's people keep tagging me in the don't fuck with cats thing.
Oh,
I'm not watching it.
She
I'm
won't.
Never watching it.
She won't.
I won't even read about
it. I watched it. If people are wondering, I watched it. And then I even told Christine, I was like, I didn't know, by the way, it was about Luca Magnotta. I saw the trailer when I was like on Netflix and I started playing, and I was like, oh, that looks like pretty like something I would watch. And then I texted Christine and I was like, hey, it's about cats and it's true crime, so if you want to watch it. And she was like, no, it's about...
Do you have any idea what you're saying to me right now?
It's about Luca Magnotta. I'm not going
to
watch that.
I'm like, do you think even I want anything to do with this nonsense? And then
I will say, it was a good documentary, but like, it's definitely something you wouldn't watch.
I can't even bear the thought of you killing Skylar. Like, I can't. Even my,
you certainly would stop me. That's
let's
for sure.
just say it's about animal cruelty partially, and it's about Luca yeah. Magnotta, and that story was hard enough to tell. Now that I have a cat, I don't even want to.
Parts of it were really disturbing.
Yeah, I can't even.
But it was a really well done documentary. Like, I feel like I learned a whole lot about that whole case.
Yeah, I mean, so. I heard it's very good, but there were some people who were writing me saying it's really good, but I've been sobbing for hours. I'm like, okay, no, I don't want that. Nope.
This is not me convincing you. I'm just saying out loud for other people who are wondering. The it doesn't show the actual like the acts, but it shows like the first like 3 seconds of a clip before anything happens.
See,
so
like even thinking about it makes my stomach hurt.
Yeah, that's why I never recommended it to you after I knew.
I appreciate that. And sorry, guys. I know that like everyone wanted me to watch it. I'll watch pretty much any crime documentary out there, and I have, but that one I can't do. I can't do the animal cruelty stuff or, like, severe torture stuff. Uh-uh.
I think I actually watched it on my way to Virginia.
Yeah, you were texting me after you left. Yeah.
That was a good documentary.
Anyway, so that's all I have. So, how you doing? You ready to
I'm good.
Spook me?
This is one of those things where I hope you have a long drive because my story's long, and I'm sorry.
Yay!
Let me see. The first one actually isn't that bad. The second one is. So, this week, you guys are kind of off the hook. It's shorter than next week, but next week's gonna be a little long. Sorry.
Ooh.
So I'm doing a two-parter.
So don't go on your road trip until next week.
Right. I'm doing a two-parter this time around. So this is part one. Next week will be part two.
Oh, okay. I get it. I was like, how do you already know your next week's story?
Because I prepared. I did two episodes.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. That is so nice. So I received this beautiful lilac shrub, and Leona and I planted it together, and we did find a creepy like saint statue while we were digging up the yard. But that aside, it was really a wonderful experience. The funniest part is my neighbor, Anne, hi Anne, walked past me the other day and said, oh, I saw your lilac bush that you mentioned on the podcast. And I thought, wow, advertising really works, folks. I talked about that lilac shrub. She saw it in my yard. And I said, Leona and I worked very hard to plant that. And I also found a creepy saint while I dug it up. But anyway, the point being, it looks professional. It looks like a landscaper put it there, and a toddler and I actually put it there. So I feel like we've fooled everyone. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code DRINK at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code DRINK at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code DRINK. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. You've probably heard about Burrow. It's a new kind of furniture company known for timeless design, durable materials, and details that make life in your space easier. Last year, they brought their expertise outside with the launch of their outdoor line, and now they're adding more must-have pieces to the collection. Dunes offers seating, dining, and lounger options, while Scout is a new folding chair upholstered in a chic woven fabric. Made of durable materials made for all seasons, weather-resistant teak, stainless alloy, quick-dry, stain-resistant cushions, love that, with easy assembly and disassembly. They also just launched a new standing desk co-pilot with adjustable height, a durable scratch-resistant body with built-in storage to make working at home easier than ever. And of course, there's Burrow's legacy seating collections like the Nomad and Range, now available in new colors. So no matter what you choose, you always get free shipping on every order, which can run up to $100 for larger items, and that is a win. You know Emma and I love our Burrow, and now that they have outdoor furniture, I'm very excited to get my lounge on. We have this balcony, and I am always looking for something to make it comfy but also look chic, you know, because it's outside, everyone can see it, and I want to look stylish while I'm bird watching. I love Burrow. It's easy to assemble. It ships free. I can't recommend them highly enough. And that's why We Drink listeners can get 15% off their first order at burrow.com/drink. That's Burrow, burrow.com/drink for 15% off. burrow.com/drink.
So this story, let me tell you what's going on here. Because the 1920s were 100 years ago. Everyone's freaking out. Or at least they were when New Year happened. Everyone was like, we have to dress like we're for the roaring 20s and stuff.
We probably all forgot, but...
Okay, well, that's what happened. So since it was like the 20s, I was like, oh, maybe I'll do a story from the 1920s.
That's because fun.
I wanted to keep in theme. I was trying to be aesthetically pleasing.
I love when we do themes that we don't tell each other about so that only one of us does the theme.
Yes.
It's always really good that way.
So anyway, I was trying to think, like, what are big things that happened in the paranormal world in the 1920s? And so I decided that I'm going... The original thought was, oh, I will talk about spiritualism from the 1920s, because that was when, like,
yes,
the Ouija board and seances were, like, at the peak of their, like,
oh, yeah,
parlor
the spiritualists
games and stuff.
Were wild, folks.
So I started getting into spiritualism in the 1920s. That was a large pill to swallow.
I imagine.
I ended up reading a lot, and then I ended up finding out, like, it sounds like a fever dream, but I found a story that really just, like, hits every part of our show.
What?
Like, it has a... I don't know how I've never heard of this, and I'm sure someone out there is like, how the fuck didn't you know about this? And you might also say that. But I
doubt it.
I found out that through spiritualism... Oh, there were a lot of famous people who were also spiritualists at the time. And one of them, at one point, was Houdini. Harry Houdini. Did you know about this? Do you know what story I'm going to tell?
Yes.
Which one?
The one where he... died and then he wanted or he died and he wanted them to contact him after his death or whatever the fuck.
No.
Oh.
Well, I will talk about his death, but that's not it. So apparently Houdini at one point, who if you don't know was a like the
Maybe
world's
I
most
know.
Famous
I mean,
magician.
I, yeah.
He apparently was... while in the middle of his magic act in the 1920s, he actually canceled his tour to start a second job as professionally going undercover and debunking fraud mediums.
And then that's why he was like, when I die, try and contact me, and it didn't fucking work. Or so. His wife tried to contact him.
We'll learn about it.
You tell him the story. I'm sorry. I don't mean it.
So anyway, I didn't know that there was a magician who literally like...
Hell yeah.
Like went on a spree trying to expose mediums.
Well, it's like Penn and Teller.
I did not
they
know any of this.
They basically do the same thing, I guess.
So here is my attempt. And then...
I'm amped about this.
Okay, good, because I don't know where I'm starting.
I also don't really know the story. I just like know of the fact.
I had no fucking clue. I was like, how did I not know that like the world's most famous magician also
was
like
a huge
was
skeptic.
In the paranormal world?
Yeah, he was like a huge like skeptic in the yeah. Well, you're about to tell me.
Let's just talk about it in 10 different ways roundaboutly without telling the story.
And
let's
then just
that.
Close your computer and I'll go
the end.
Yay.
And that's why we drank. Okay, so I'm just gonna start. I'm with like a quick little blurb about spiritualism. That way I can say that I still covered it.
okay. Remember that time I covered it for 4 seconds?
Well, I am going to, I'll say that I'm going to talk about a quick little blurb about spiritualism in the 1920s, but like I will at some point probably also cover spiritualism when it first really started in like the 1840s.
I'm just teasing you.
Just because that also had its own slew of stories, but we're sticking with the 1920s on principle because it's now 2020.
You're starting off strong here.
Well, it'll be a steep decline, don't worry.
Okay.
So
yeah, because mine's after you.
So spiritualism peaked from, like I said, the 1840s to the 1920s. Around then there was 8 million followers in the US and Europe, mostly were middle upper class women or socialists or those that were advocating for social reform or were against organized religion. So it was pretty much a bunch of progressives out there that were like, we really need to stick together and find our community. And it
Women.
Usually ended up being spiritualists.
Right.
They believed that contact with spirits was possible and that spirits are on a higher plane, a.k.a. they can answer questions for us from the beyond. And of several other things, but that's the leading theme through this.
Sure.
There were some really famous people who also got involved and converted to spiritualism, especially like Charles Dickens and Marie Curie. And a fun fact, one of the people who did a lot of writings or contributed a lot of things to spiritualism, his name was Frank Mesmer, and he was the one that developed hypnotism, which is inducing trances to speak with spirits, and that is where we get the phrase mesmerizing.
Yay!
You're saying a lot of things like your brain is not blown, but every bullet I went through, I was like, what?
I feel like I've either watched a documentary or maybe Astonishing Legends or something, because like... this is like I like vaguely know this knowledge.
Every single thing I read, I was a changed person. I was blown away at every turn. I was like, wow, that makes so much sense.
I think maybe, you know how I go through phases? I think one of my phases was this. And I think
specifically Houdini in 1923.
Well, not Houdini, but the whole spiritualism, like debunking the, all the, I don't know.
I hope someone else out there is mind blown because I was freaking out.
Well, but do you remember that story I did of the family who would say they were spiritualists and then they would fucking murder people?
Yes.
And so there was like all sorts of weird stuff I've studied. I've researched studied it. Yeah. Around, cause clearly I know it really well, but around that topic, like, I feel like I had murderers from that time. Gotcha. And it all boils into,
well, let me know when I blow your mind because I need,
you're going to blow my mind. Don't worry. I'm sorry. Let me know when it happens. I'm not trying to be a hater.
No. You're not being a hater. I really thought that I was going to get you on some of these things, but you're already on top of it. You're so smart with your big fat brain. Okay.
Oh, shut up. Earlier today, Em read me a list of the most obvious things that you've never thought about. And everyone, I just started screaming like, what? Like, for example, Eeyore is the sound a donkey makes. That's why he's called Eeyore. I mean,
so things like that.
You've already, that's what blows my mind, not this.
Okay, so tell me when I really get you.
Okay.
So while spiritualism in the 1920s was still on the up and up, there were organizations that were created such as, and I think this was actually before the 1920s too, but at this point, organizations had been created. What's wrong with me? Organizations had been created such as the Society of, is it psychical research?
Yes. Remember, because we had this whole you said cyclical.
And yeah. Now I'm freaked out that I'm going to say the wrong thing.
Psychical.
Psychical, like, research. Psychic. And they even had their own committee called Haunted Houses.
What?
Does that not sound like something I want to do?
Now you blew my mind.
There was also the London Spiritualist Alliance, and they had a newspaper called The Light, which I would love to subscribe to now.
Man.
Because they have articles such as Evenings at Home in Spiritual Seance, Ghosts in Africa, Chronicles of Spirit Photography, and then there was also like a whole bunch, like a whole listener stories section where people would submit their personal experiences.
It's like early podcasting.
It's like We Are the Light.
Sure. Huh. Yeah. Okay. We Are the Light. It sounds like a friggin' one of your Christian stories.
Oh. By the way, thank you to everyone who started watching Greenleaf. You're welcome, by the way, because you're gonna have a blast.
Well, you never mentioned Oprah was involved. If you had told me that, I would have jumped on board much sooner.
She's the executive producer and she acts in it. She stars in it. Not stars in it. She's in it a lot, though.
But it's not fictional.
She's an executive producer of a show.
Oh, you said
she also acts in it.
But is it like a fictional show or like a...
Yeah, it's fictional.
I thought it was a reality show.
No, I told you it was fiction.
I am so confused. Sorry.
I brought this up last time.
I thought you meant they were all like reality shows. I'm confused. Never mind.
I literally said it was a fiction. Oh my goodness. So apparently spiritualism was also one of the first forms for mixed public audiences. And in the UK, invitations to tea now often included a seance.
What the hell,
that
guys?
That sounds so
bring
fun.
Bring it back. Bring it back.
I would, first of all, there's nothing I love more than a good tea time. Also, nothing I love more than a good seance. You slam them together. What do you get? You get a recipe or fun.
You know what tea time is, right? That's when you start golf. So you don't really love that.
Tea time is also when you get together and drink tea.
I know, but I feel like everyone's...
What is with you today? Oh my gosh.
No, because you're like, I love a good tea time. And I'm like, God, you sound like my dad.
I do love a good tea time. I had tea time when I was home. It was very lovely. In the 1880s, the credibility of spiritualists suffered from con artists posing as mediums, foreshadowing for the future.
Dun, dun, dun.
And during the 1920s, there was a revival when World War I and the Spanish flu pandemic caused a rebirth because there were so many people dying.
Oh, weird.
So after those two things happened, so many people, especially women, were losing their sons and husbands.
Oh, geez.
And they wanted some sort of closure. And so they started bringing back seances and things like that to try to communicate one last time with their family.
That's really interesting. Okay.
So two of the popular parlor games of the 1920s were seances and Ouija boards. And spiritualism, because it was considered a mental gift or an innate gift and not based on gender, anyone could communicate with spirits. It interested women specifically in that they could do something.
Women could find, they couldn't vote, but they could talk to ghosts.
They could literally speak to spirits, but also how dare they vote?
How dare they have a say?
So another revival after World War II came for spiritualism, and there was another rise in it. But at that point, instead of it being more paranormal based, it was generally supernatural based. So that was like the UFO phenomenon and things like that. But we're focusing on after World War I.
Weird.
So after the 1920s, spiritualism involved, this is my last little bullet about spiritualism, but after the 1920s, it broke off into kind of three different branches of practicing. There were independent practitioners. There was the spiritualist church, if you wanted a community. And there was just the general New Age movement, which we probably fall into a lot.
So I'm sure that's
like crystals and astrology.
And just like being in Los Angeles.
Being in Los Angeles. Eating a lot of kale. Current spiritualism, though, does not have as much showmanship as it used to, because back then it was very, let's all have a seance and do table tipping and automatic writing. Yeah, very visual theatrics versus now it's more of a mental state of being or being a sensitive or things like that. That being said, that's all you need to know for that.
Let's bring back the theatrics, though. Come on.
I'm walking theatrics, so let's...
That's what I always say. Here comes my
walking. Catch me at tea time. It's going to get weird.
My walking theatrics coming, stomping on through.
So I'm going to give you a quick little thing on Houdini to figure out how he blends into the spiritualism.
Great. Life.
So Houdini was born, I don't know how to say his name. I think it's Erik.
Oh, dear.
It's Hungarian.
That says Eric.
I mean, no, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
Not the way I want it to sound. Erik Weiss. And he was born in Appleton, Wisconsin in 1874. Apparently, he was already, like, they knew from birth that he was a little trickster and an illusionist.
Oh, that's cute.
As a kid, he would pick locks on his crib and he would make his vegetables disappear by hiding them in different magical cups and making them disappear and reappear. Reappear.
That's amazing.
Can you imagine being that kid's parents? Like, eat your vegetables. And then you think he finally did. And then they're like, in your plants.
Or like, please don't die. And then like, he's out of his crib. Like, wait, what? We put a safety lock on that.
So at one point, he wanted to be a magician when he grew up. And he read a book by Jean Robert Houdin. Houdin?
Don't look at me. You're the one who says you speak French.
Once upon a time. And so this, I think it's Houdin. This author slash magician actually taught him some of his very first tricks. And so when he decided he was going to be a magician himself, he changed his name to Houdini, which is Houdin with an I at the end.
I love that.
Yeah.
Does so that mean like Houdini's Houdin's student? Or does it
I think he was just trying to
an eye on there?
I think he was just trying to like do an homage to him. Aww. But maybe it means something that I don't know about. So at 19, now officially going by Houdini, he performed at a school and accidentally spilled acid on a girl's dress during an act.
Oh dear.
And so Houdini went home and told his mom what happened. So the mom made the girl a new dress and had Houdini deliver it to her. And then that girl ended up being his wife, Bess.
Yay! I was like, tell me they fell in love.
And,
how did I not know? That's a sweet story.
And then quickly after that, he became famous. So
I poured acid on her and we fell in love.
It was all she needed.
That's what Blaze and I did too.
Aww.
It's really sweet.
It sounds nicer than how you guys maybe met sometimes.
Probably, yeah. I was on a Tinder date and got stood up.
Aww. And you just wish acid fell
acid
on you.
Acid is more romantic, I think.
So after his mother's death, apparently they were super duper close. And that's when he started looking into spiritualists because he wanted to find a way to reach her. And at the time, he not necessarily was a believer, but he was super open-minded to it. And he kept meeting spiritualists that were willing to help him, but then he could never get in contact with her, or they would get in contact with her, quote, but then they were definitely like kind of conning him for his money.
And he can probably sniff out right away.
Yeah, he's literally a master trickster.
Yeah, this whole thing.
And so he kept trying to find ways to talk to his mom. And apparently, this is really sad. He used to go to her graveyard or to her gravesite after every time he went to a spiritualist or a medium, and he would stand at her grave and be like, I haven't found you yet. It really fucking sad.
What the fuck, dude?
So anyway, he eventually got his hopes up so many times that he was like, fuck these guys. They are not real. Like, there's no way this is real. I've gone to enough of them that someone would have been able to help me. And eventually he decided that he even called them, he called mediums causing, quote, victimization of the bereaved.
Well, actually, like, that's a really good point. I mean, I feel like this happens a lot.
I mean, not to say that there aren't real mediums out there, but I would say a lot of them.
A lot of them.
Are
phony.
Are just using you for your money and taking advantage of the fact that you're really sad and you just want to talk to your mom again.
Like, vulnerable people, you know, and it's and they also give real mediums a bad name, in my opinion. So.
Yeah, exactly. So eventually he just got super mad and he now believed that all of their, quote, gifts were illusions, just like the ones that he was tricking people with.
Wow.
He just thought that he was at least upfront with the fact that he was tricking people.
You got to give him props, though, because I feel like a lot of people are like, that's all bullshit. At least he was like, let's find out. And like, yes, really tried, you know.
So as a, quote, master illusionist, he took it upon himself. He was like, there is no trick I cannot do or replicate or duplicate. I am going to figure out what the hell all these memes are doing, and I'm going to expose them so nobody else gets hurt like I did.
What a badass.
What a badass. So he eventually became hellbent on preventing other, quote, mediums from giving people false hope and became an active debunker. And in 1923, he took time off from his magic act to travel across the country and give lectures against going to mediums.
Wow.
So if you are a medium out there, I'm sorry, this is going to be very anti-medium.
Have you ever seen Penn & Teller?
Yes.
I didn't know what it was. Like, I knew
it's a great show.
It was a great show, but I left like, they're wrong. And Blaise was like, they're right, Christine. And I was like, no.
Anyway, I'm sorry if I offend any mediums out here. It's not me. It's not you. It's Houdini. So put that
me,
on a shirt.
It's not you. It's Houdini. It always is.
In 1924, So here's the problem. There was so much information that I'm going to tell you a part of the story, and then I'm going to come back to it later.
Well, that's fun.
So there's this thing, and then more people get introduced, but I want you to know their backstory, so we have to kind of time travel to the past again so you know how everything adds up. So I'm just going to tell you this about Houdini, and then we're going to do a little time traveling.
Great.
So in 1924, he wrote a book called A Magician Among the Spirits, and this book had Houdini debunking a bunch of the tricks that mediums often did, so that way you could do them yourself, like a DIY, I suppose. And to expose fake psychics, this is where the first part of the story comes in, because I didn't know if I wanted to give you the full title yet. But the first half of the story, and the story that we're telling in this episode, is about Rose Mackenberg. And Rose Mackenberg was his assistant.
Oh.
So this is the story of Houdini's assistant, Rose Mackenberg.
I don't know anything about this.
Okay. So, to expose fake psychics, Houdini hired a small army of undercover agents, calling them, quote, my own secret service.
Oh, come on.
So Houdini had his own secret service, and these investigators would get into town a few days before Houdini's next act, and they would check out local mediums. They would often go disguised as different types of people in the area and use false names. Often these false names were also had puns to them, such as Francis Rod, where if you spelt it out, it was F. Rod. She would sign herself in as. So she would sign into the medium appointment as fraud.
This is I was gonna say someone should make a movie. I'm sure there is a movie.
Okay,
right?
I'm so glad you said this, because one, there isn't a movie, but two, hang on. I had the most ingenious idea, where if anyone knows Lin-Manuel Miranda, I need him to hear this exact sentence from
me. My brother me knows him, so can we somehow
bring them in the loop?
Podcast connect, please.
So the way that Hamilton happened is he became obsessed with the story of Hamilton and wrote a Broadway about this. How is there not a Houdini exposing mediums in the paranormal Broadway? Like, how is there not a Hamilton version of Houdini?
Called Houdini. Or what's the thing you call it? Hellbent Houdini.
Hellbent, or apparently, one of the nicknames that his undercover agents went by was Spook Spies.
Sorry.
And I don't know. Lin-Manuel Miranda, where are
like
you?
Sounds like the children's version.
This sounds like an award-winning show.
What about F. Rod?
I don't even want the rights. You can take all the money, Lin.
No, I want the...
Okay,
Lin, we'll split it.
But if there is a Broadway musical one day about Houdini exposing mediums in the 1920s, I just wanted to be out there, like TMTM, I at least had the idea.
Yeah, Lin, honest to God, I think
it'd be genius.
You'd be perfect for this.
Think of the special effects on stage. Get
also,
out of here.
Also, just side note, I just watched the Fiddler on the Roof documentary on the plane, because this is what I do.
Great.
Instead of Don't Fuck with Cats about murders, I watch Fiddler on the Roof. But Lin was in it, and it was really a beautiful story, and I loved it. So,
this is a delightful man.
I just think he's a delightful man.
Someone get this sent over that way.
Please.
It would be bananas. Think of the magic trick. You'd be going to a magic show and a paranormal show and a Broadway show all in one.
But like for skeptics too.
I can't breathe. This is such a good idea. Okay.
Don't, Eva, cut all this out so no one steals it.
Okay. So they would go disguise as different types of people and use false names such as F. Rod.
I love
when they would sign in. And many of these mediums claimed to, many of the mediums that they went to would be speaking to these undercover spies, thinking that they're like bereaved mothers or someone who just lost their husband.
I see.
And the mediums would give them all of these, they'd be like, oh, I'm making contact with your husband, and but like that person in real life, like never once
right.
was married, is single. So like they had this whole list of things that mediums were saying to them that was just not accurate.
Right.
And Houdini's investigators would write detailed notes to debrief him when he got into town for his next show.
This is so cool.
So that way, when he got into town for that show, he would then go on stage and debunk the local mediums in front of everyone. So he would literally...
To be fair, I think they deserve it. They literally took so much money from all these people who were like, I miss my son, my dead son. I mean, right. come on.
So he would always... So he would literally go on stage and in the middle of his magic act, he would have a specific portion of his act where all he did was the same tricks that mediums did. And he would say, oh, if you like these tricks, you can go to this person down the street and that person down the street. They all do it because that's, they're fake.
Yeah, that's a little cringeworthy. I hope he locked his doors at night. They were probably out to get him.
So apparently he always carried a gun on him because so many spiritualists who were obviously on the side of mediums and didn't believe that any of them were frauds, they all actively threatened him regularly. And he almost actually, he didn't ever buy any of his investigators' guns, but he suggested all of his undercover Secret Service carry a gun on them.
Also, guys, this has just become also a crime drama. So can we just talk about how this is covering your
As far as I know, he never used the gun, but he was always nervous because so many people were threatening to kill him because he was...
This is a wild ride.
It's a roller coaster.
I mean, you were not kidding. This touches on every part of our show.
That's why, like, this is a two-parter. Okay, yeah, so he always announced also, like, he knew that he was pissing people off, obviously, because whether or not there were mediums in the audience or believers in the audience, he would always, at the end of that act, or at the end of that bit in his act, he would always announce that if the mediums wanted him to stop, then he would pay them $10,000 to do anything that he could not duplicate.
Like, whoa!
Like, prove me wrong and I'll stop.
Oh my God! Wow!
Some sources said $5,000, some said 10, but I think 10 is a little more dramatic, so I like it. So,
Lynn, write down 10. I think that's a good one.
Lynn? 10 rhymes with more things, I think. So if you were thinking about like rapping a song about Houdini.
You know. And you were, right?
I know you were. I can feel it. Wherever you are in the world right now, your ears are tingling. Okay. So sometimes Houdini actually came to the seances himself also in disguise. And then halfway through, he would reveal himself and expose the medium to her face.
Now that is a scene I want to watch.
You know what would have been fun, though, is if he decided he was also going to do some spooky allusions to her. Like, to, like, the medium.
And trick them into thinking that he's...
Or make them think that there's really a ghost because that's something they're not doing.
And she's like, wait a second. Yeah, like, yeah,
oh, my
God,
like, that's actually not supposed to happen.
Like, oh, shit, yeah, I totally... Oh, that's fine.
So sometimes... Houdini would go to the seances. So the leader of his team, because he had this whole little Secret Service team.
Sure.
By the way, most of them were women. And he... I mean, to be fair, I think that it was easier for women to probably fake...
They probably were the most clientele.
Exactly. They're probably like the right demographic anyway. But in the 1920s, he happily hired women to give them a job because it was so hard for women to find jobs.
I think, and carry a gun. Now that's fun. I want to be in this play. I just decided in this musical.
Lynn, you listening?
I can't sing.
I want to be Houdini. Can I?
No, that's Lynn's job.
Oh, right.
However, I can't sing, but I don't think that's a problem.
I'll be one of the ghosts. I'll be like the fake ghost you like have on pulleys.
Yeah. You pull M across stage. I'll rap. Lynn suddenly out, okay? He was never in.
Lynn opened the box of possibility and then slammed it shut and padlocked
it. And threw it into the trash can.
So the leader of his team was Rose Mackenberg, who, by the way, in the beginning also believed in psychics and fortune tellers and mediums. So in the 1920s, she was working on an investment case. She did like a financial fraud. That's what she worked in. And she was working on an investment case where a psychic had given bad advice to someone on their money matters.
Okay.
And so she knew that a psychic was involved, had given false information, and then caused this whole financial problem. So she reached out to Houdini. I don't know how easy it was to just like fucking tweet at someone in the 1920s, but she got a hold of Houdini and was like, I need help. I don't know anything about mediums. Can you help expose like what tricks she used so I know how to help this case? So after getting to know each other, Houdini liked her so much that he hired her for his undercover team because he taught her all the little tricks of the trade.
What a badass.
So she claims to have in the course of her time with Houdini, she claims to have investigated over 1,000 mediums.
Wow.
I think in the first 2 years, she investigated like 300. And then at least by now, she's investigated over 1,000. And every one of them, she says, was a fraud.
Wow.
She has been known to say, quote, I can smell a rat before I can smell the incense.
That is a Hamilton, listen. This
Hamilton,
is a
good
t-shirt.
That's like the I'm not throwing away my shot line right there.
Can
like, that's
you
like
even,
intermission.
That's like the CD that on the track on the CD that in the car I just like keep
like,
rewinding.
Look, they're like it's like the Skylar sisters, but they're like a band of like medium exposers. Okay.
Like my Skylar or like no.
Not your Skylar the
okay,
Spider.
Sorry.
No.
A different
Skylar.
I thought maybe now you were finally coming around to Skylar.
There's a lot of weird full circles happening here. So,
yes. Well, yeah.
So, Rose Mackenberg, she had investigated so many cases for Houdini, and she had gone to so many spiritualist retreats and churches getting information that she actually got the nickname through this little group as the Rev. Because she had been known to have been like been awarded so many spiritualist titles and degrees with all of the people that she had met that they were like, oh, you must be the Rev.
Ooh.
So in 1925, one of the cases she actually covered was she was investigating a medium named Charles Gonzalez, and he claimed to be like one of the greatest spiritualists on earth. Mm. And she disguised herself as a mom who lost her baby and wanted to make contact with the baby. So Charles said that he was like, oh, I'll help. And so he said, okay, I'm channeling an 800-year-old Hindu guide. And for $25, if you would like to also be able to channel the 800-year-old Hindu guide,
what?
I can teach you how to look into water and see the dead for $25.
That sounds like a good deal to me.
Well, in 1920s, I don't know about that.
Also, I don't really want to see the dead, so never mind.
Charles also said that the experience would work better for her if she took her clothes off. So,
what?
So that's what she said. And then she walked away, told Houdini what happened. And since he was coming to town in a couple days for his show,
he took his clothes off and was like, I'm ready.
He got naked. And that was the magic we all wanted.
Yeah.
So he knew like, well, okay, well, I'm going to be in town anyway. Like, I'll figure out what like where this guy's going. Apparently, Charles Gonzalez was actually going to Houdini's show. And Houdini found out about that. So when he got on stage to debunk all the mediums in the area, he singled out Charles Gonzalez and told everyone what he had said to her behind closed doors.
Cringe. But also, like, of all people to fucking call out in public, the guy who told a woman to take off her clothes so that she could see her dead son.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Exactly. So Houdini handled it. And apparently he was in the audience and he ran out because he was getting booed so heavily by everyone.
Finally.
So thank you, Houdini, for being an ally to women.
Seriously.
Another case that Rose was on top of was in 1926 when apparently Houdini had actually urged Congress to pass a bill to make fortune telling illegal in DC. Doesn't this sound like a fever dream?
Yes.
This doesn't. I'm like, I'm sorry. No, Houdini is at Congress and he's trying to like stop the paranormal spirits. Like,
were you the one who taught me about Abraham Lincoln's wife and how she had?
In the 1920s, or I don't know if that was that wasn't in the 1920s at all.
No,
but one of the early. And I think of the first wave of spiritualism.
It was, yeah.
And was it Mary Todd Lincoln? Was that her name?
Yes.
And she was huge on that because their son had died. And so when Lincoln was in office, there
was
a lot of
and
seances.
So she kind of fell into and like hired someone to live there and stuff, right?
Yeah. Like an in-house seance orchestrator.
And it was really sad.
And during this Congress, by the way, it was House Resolution, I think, 8989, if you're looking at the bill.
8989,
but close. Houdini was the star witness, and he obviously supported the bill because they were trying to make fortune-telling illegal. And Rose also testified and told how she, before they ever went to this committee meeting or this hearing, she came in a few days early, like she normally does, and she went undercover and talked to local D.C. mediums. And one of the more famous D.C. mediums at the time, her name was Jane Coates. And Jane had Rose as a client and didn't know that it was Rose, thought it was someone else, and told her that the bill would never pass and she wasn't worried about the hearing coming up in a few days because at least four of the senators there were her clients. And so she was outing the fact that people were trying to pass a bill, but behind closed doors, they were supporting mediums because they were going to them. Jane also said it wouldn't pass because, quote, seances are held at the White House with President Coolidge.
So the White House has always just fucking had seances, I guess.
So Lincoln was big on that, and I guess the tradition carried out. But at this time, Coolidge was in the office, just hanging out. And but apparently, like, that was very hush-hush. Like, nobody knew about that. So she ended up, like, outing President Coolidge as using seances to, like, and, like, talking to mediums for, like, political decisions.
Gain, quote unquote.
So that ended up helping Houdini for a second because the whole argument was like, well, people can't just think this isn't a big deal and people are just using mediums for fun. But like clearly politicians are making like our national decisions
the head of our
off
nation.
Of this stuff.
Right.
Like these are our government is handling really serious matters with seances.
To be fair, that does explain a lot. Mm-hmm. Just saying.
But so it ended up like damning the government, and President Coolidge got kind of dragged through the mud. And so Houdini ended up having to make like a public apology to President Coolidge.
Whoa.
This does
sound like a fever dream.
I was trying to explain it. I was hanging out with a friend last night, and I tried explaining it to her, and I was like, so Houdini publicly apologizes to President Coolidge for using a medium. I was like, I don't know how to explain this to you.
Let's stop shop talk.
And like, there was like heavy press on this. Like, the New York Times was covering this like crazy. There was a quote that today's session was unusually disorderly and came near winding up for a free-for-all fist fight, because all these politicians were like now having to defend themselves, and they felt backed into a corner that they got called out for using mediums.
Holy shit.
Everyone was in denial that they believed in this stuff and they were for the bill, but then they were also like, there was proof that they, anyway, it got very messy. So eventually Congress declined to outlaw fortune telling because it was part of a religious practice, so they were able to kind of scathe
that
the whole bill.
That seems to be about right.
Prior to his death, which I will get to, I'm not just scanning over that. Prior to his death, Houdini had actually said, like, you know what, I am still open-minded to the thought that there could be a spiritualist out there, or like a real medium out there. I just haven't met them.
Okay, well, that's an interesting twist.
Yeah, and he had actually set up 20 different codes with 20 different friends. So if he came back from the dead...
That's what it was, right. Sorry.
There would be at least multiple different ways that they could prove this.
I think, well, this could be quiet. I'm not trying to guess what happens in your story, so I'm going to be quiet. I'm sorry.
So he ended up giving out multiple codes to different people, and so someone would be able to make contact with him if he died. Just so we know, in 1945, Rose had actually come forward with an update saying that the message had not gone through yet, because she was one of the people who got a code from him, and she had not been able to make contact.
That's amazing. I mean, that's really incredible, though. We should come up with some codes. I guess we have enough. Just like, hello,
fresh. That's it. Yeah, for sure. After his death, Rose continued investigating mediums for another 20 years and gave lectures on psychic fraud around the country. And she actually helped the Chicago Tribune in exposés on spiritualism called Spook Spies. And those articles were featured in magazines such as Look, Popular Science, Saturday Evening Post, all that good stuff.
Delight.
She was also in national magazines, on TV, and she testified in more court cases in the future. And she warns that for the future public, she warns that anytime a country is at war, the belief in spiritualism will rise because more frauds will come out to trick us.
Wow.
Or since spiritualism will be on the rise because people will want to make contact with people who've passed on, more frauds are going to come out of the woodwork. So always be careful.
Man, that's alarming.
Fun fact, she lived at 310 West 24th Street in Manhattan until she died. I think she died in 1968. And for her whole time after she retired, she always slept with the lights on because after years of seances, quote, I got tired of dark rooms.
Oh, my God. Whoa. What a weird
way to end that on Rose. So I also do want to mention Houdini's death a little bit. I'm not going to talk specifically about how he died yet because I'll bring that up next week. But after his death, because he'd given so many people specific codes for when he died, you know, what might happen or who. Yeah. They should expect a certain thing for him to say during a seance. And after his death, his wife, Bess, offered $10,000 to anyone who could help her contact her husband.
That's the one
So in 1928, Arthur Ford announced that he had received a message from Houdini or his mom, depending on the source that I was reading. It was like Houdini or Houdini's mom finally came.
Oh, got it.
And Bess asked for a seance, was like, okay, well, if you say that you found him, like, let's check this out and I'll pay you 10 grand.
The wife, right?
The wife. So Bess would know if it was a real seance or not, because Houdini had already told her the phrase before he died. So Bess met with Arthur and a group of spiritualists, and during the seance, Houdini allegedly came forward, and Houdini said to Bess, quote, Rosabel, answer, tell, pray, answer, look, tell, answer, answer, tell. And everyone was like, what the fuck is going on here?
I have goose cam and I don't even know what that means.
So Bess took off her wedding ring and showed the engraved lyrics in the ring that said, Rosabel, sweet Rosabel, I love you more than I can tell. Over me you cast a spell. I love you, my sweet Rosabel. And Bess even, so that apparently that was a song that they used to sing together on stage.
I am fucking shook, dude.
And that was their code, apparently. She agreed. She's like, that was the code. Those words specifically were the code.
Like, mega goose cam right now.
in the right order and everything.
That was this actual code.
That was the code.
Holy shit.
And apparently she had been told by Houdini, if that ever comes through in a seance, it means believe.
I am losing my mind. Okay.
So Bess even signed a sworn statement affirming that the seance was successful and legitimate. And this gave spiritualists reason to freak the fuck out. They were like, the one man who was always a non-believer has confirmed an afterlife for us. And unfortunately, years later, Bess had to retract the statement because she found out that their code phrase had actually been leaked in a 1927 biography.
Like somebody must have found it. I knew it was too good to be true. Damn it.
So after that, she officially was like, fuck that. She told all of her friends.
That makes it so much worse.
Yeah.
What a slimy bastard.
She told all of her friends, when I die, don't even come looking for me. If someone tells you they made contact with me in the afterlife, they're lying to you. I will not return. So she was like, fuck that. I'm going to go be with Houdini.
Like, we're not coming back here ever again.
So for the next few years after that, though, she would still regularly hold a Halloween seance just to see if they could bring him back. I don't think she ever expected anything, but it was Halloween. And Halloween was the day he died. And so they were like, let's just see if anything comes out. If not, then we'll have fun.
It's probably also a nice homage to all his times.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So her last seance, though, where she tried to make contact with him was in 1936. Apparently it was covered with press. It was broadcast everywhere because she really this time was like, I'm going to find Houdini. This is my one last shot. If I don't find him, then that's it. I'm not going to try again.
Yeah.
And Houdini never showed. And so when she gave up, apparently a huge storm broke out that night only over the house.
Whoa.
Like only in that area of town and nowhere else. But it was like super rain, super lightning, super thunder. Apparently just over them was a massive rain cloud, and that was the night that she gave up and never tried to make contact with him again. And when they've asked her why she has not tried to reach out since, she said, quote, because 10 years is long enough to wait for any man. And that's the story of, I don't know, Houdini, kind of.
I am like, I want to cry, but I don't know why. And I have goose cam, but like also.
But also what a strong, like, badass woman and of I've waited a goddamn decade for him.
And I want to rap about it, too.
I've listened.
The strangest feeling I've ever felt.
So that's supposed to be about Rose Mackenberg, but I now realize that I only talked about her for a chunk of that.
Think about it. Rose Mac. That's me. Rose,
it was.
Mac.
Let's just call it Houdini Part 1.
Wow.
Let's just for Eva to title this. Houdini Part 1. The end.
Eva does not title it with things that make sense. Remember that, right?
Okay, title this like Lin-Manuel
Lin,
Miranda's,
are you listening?
Next big break.
We have the secret to your next big success because you need it from a podcast, I'm sure. I'm sure you can't come up with one on your own. Oh my God.
All right, anyway, the end.
I am like,
you'll get more of that next week.
And. And before you told me...
Is that what you knew? Is that the stuff you knew?
Yeah, well, no. I mean, I knew that she had tried to contact him over and over and it never worked. But that's all I knew. Like, I knew that he had told her... I didn't know about all the secret people, but I knew that he had told her a code and that he said, if you ever hear this code, it's me. And then I think I knew she hadn't heard it. So when you said it, I was like, I want to believe it so bad.
I mean, like, Houdini had an undercover army of people exposing mediums. He ended up going to Congress and publicly apologizing to President Coolidge because it got too out of hand.
Hey, Lynn, there's presidents. Does that make you feel a little more comfortable?
You could talk about adjacent. Coolidge. You didn't get to mention him last time.
Did Hamilton ever have a seance? I don't know.
Maybe. Not that I know. I've watched the play, and that's
maybe
about as much as
just,
I know.
Like soft pitch a. We could
imagine
pitch.
Coolidge. Wait a minute, Lynn. Are you listening? There, we'll do us like it. This is just inspired. Uh-huh. This is just going to be an inspiration. It's not based on the story, just inspo. What if Coolidge has Houdini do a seance with him and they bring back Hamilton?
Hey, okay. Wow.
Wait a minute.
Whoa. Okay.
Dun, 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 okay. Dun, 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 dun.
And then M gets pulled across the stage.
With a big fat cane. I just get dragged away like vaudeville.
Oh, yep. Vaudeville indeed.
Anyway, okay.
Then, yeah. And then I'm just there because said forced my way in. Okay.
All right. And then also Skylar makes an appearance,
well,
apparently.
Skylar's obviously there too.
Okay.
That's our spider Lynn.
It won't be the Skylar sisters, but we'll find two female spiders with Skylar and it'll be Skylar's sisters.
Yeah, it'll be a knockoff.
Look, everything's going to be a knockoff. It's just like the 99-cent store version of Hamilton. Moving on.
But so much better. No.
99 cents, but worth $1 million.
We have a whole million. Lynn, I bet you've never seen that money in your life. $1 million. I bet we've piqued your interest now.
I don't know why, but I can already tell this is one of my favorite episodes we've ever done.
This is such trash. I feel like before we recorded this episode, we literally spoke to a spider, non-ironically, not with any sort of like humor, just like talk to the spider.
I don't know what's going on with me. I'm in a good mood.
I'm pretty sure I have a carbon monoxide leak. And if that's the case,
I'm pretty sure
it seems to be doing okay for us.
Look, I'm going to ride this wave. Whatever's going on, let it continue.
Holy smokes. And to think that I thought not drinking was fun?
What is your story?
Okay.
Good luck, by the way.
Thanks. I don't even remember what my fucking story is anymore. I think I don't even need to tell it. I just want to kind of rehash what we just went over.
Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with brand new releases and next listen recommendations. There's a story for every listener, from classic favorites to exclusive thrillers from best-selling authors. Elevate your heart rate with a pulse-pounding collection of thrillers you can't hear anywhere else, all brought to life with Premiere Audio. From eerie soundscapes to dynamic voice performances, you're guaranteed to be on the edge of your seat. With female writers and heroines, celebrity narration, multicast productions with immersive sound design, and traditional audiobooks, Audible has your thrill needs covered. Plus, with an Audible membership, get access to thousands of titles and the chance to discover new favorites and formats, like the exclusive Words and Music series or a podcast. And Audible members can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. I have to tell you about a thriller I recently listened to on Audible. It's called None of This Is True, and it is actually about a true crime podcaster. And I was surprised how much I got into it. It has, speaking of like immersive sound, it was such a good audiobook. I actually recommended it for one of the recent And That's Why We Drink newsletters. I always go to Audible for my thriller fix. New Audible members can try Audible now for free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/drink or text drink to 500-500. That's audible.com/drink or text drink to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. When you want the best, you have to act quickly, or someone else will get it instead. It's like when you're hiring for your business. You want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. So what's the best way to do that? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/drink. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/drink. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/drink. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
Okay, so now this is kind of a weird thing that happened. So last week, remember I did the story of... Oh God, sorry. I'm using the Zach Bagans manual as a coaster.
Sounds right.
And a talisman and a bunch of other things, but primarily a coaster and a mouse pad. So remember how I covered that story that I had found in the Listverse article about strange coincidences, and it was the two Mary Morrises who were murdered?
Yes, and the hitman, I do know this one.
They think it was a hitman.
It doesn't happen often, but I do know what you're talking about.
It's amazing.
We found one.
And also, we haven't recorded in that we recorded that like a month ago. So I'm very proud of you.
My memory doesn't usually go back that far.
But don't worry, we're really good at memorizing lines. So
yes,
if you need us for that,
we're very good at rapping about President Coolidge, kind of
rapping. You wouldn't believe it, but it's true. Okay, so anyway, when I was writing those notes, I looked in our inbox, like in our main inbox, I typed in Mary Morris, because I was thinking a lot of times if I do cover a story, I check our inbox to see, like, some people will write in, like, that's my uncle, or, you know, this murderer, and so it's like,
yay!
I know, or like, you know, I have a connection to the case, and so sometimes I want to see if anyone has written in or suggested it or whatever. So I typed in Mary Morris, and actually part of it was that I thought I'd covered it before. Which, remember last week, last time I was freaking out, like, have I done this? Maybe. It might be finally the time.
Yes.
I hadn't. But I was searching our inbox, and I came across this email from Paige. And first of all, just most importantly, Paige sent a picture of these magnets that she had made on Shutterfly.
Okay, I've been looking at those on your computer this whole time, and I did not know what I was looking at. It looks like it's part of a Marvel thing.
One says Andrew. Jesus, what's wrong with me?
Is it Andrew Basiago
for president?
Ugh.
And one says love your hair, hate your guts.
Wow, I'm a button right next. Is that a button?
It's a magnet.
I'm a magnet right next to Andrew Basiago. That's super dope.
For president, for prez. And then this one says resident fuckboy of the Virgo supercluster. Is that a thing? I don't know.
That's what they call me.
Sounds pretty cool.
I think that's what they call me. I'm pretty sure. Also, but no. So from zoomed out, it looks like a magical superhero belt. So that's what I've been thinking was going to happen this whole time.
Well, maybe we can go with that.
Instead, I'm just an astrological fuckboy. Apparently,
I think you can make those on Shutterfly superhero belt.
I thought you meant an astrological fuckboy. You can make those on Shutterfly.
Yeah, it's easy. Just like quick formula.
You just go on Tinder. You find thousands of them.
Swipe right. So I was like obviously immediately intrigued by these, and then I thought maybe she knows Mary Morris. Nope. She was talking about a different Morris. She sends, oh, these are my magnets. Also, hey, you should look into this unsolved triple homicide in my hometown. And I was like, you have piqued my interest. And this is the story of the Tweed Morris triple murder.
Okay.
That's how we came from Morris to Morris.
I see what's happening now.
And because a lot of people are like, why don't you ever respond to my email? It's because we have like tens of thousands. So I promise.
Truly tens of thousands.
I just wanted to explain how I stumbled upon this randomly.
Because she typed in a very lucky combination of letters.
Specific story. And so here's the thing. Paige literally researched the story and sent me a bunch of information on it. So of course I was like, well, that's very thoughtful and like thank you for your hard work. And so this is what she wrote. I have a newfound respect for Christine because that shit took me literally all day.
Yeah.
Granted, I had a 2-year-old interrupting me the whole time, but Christine has GONM, so that's pretty much the same thing.
Can relate.
And then said, I hope this case is interesting for you, XOXO Paige. So I was like, okay. And I do like also wanna say I think this has happened like one time before with the Rabbit Hole podcast sent me some information. I don't just like print out the notes and then like read them to you because
no,
I
no, she
feel
like redoes them.
Really like feel like that is cheating. But I do kind of use it as like its own article almost, and then like find a bunch of my own shit and YouTube and stuff, and then kind of like make like mega notes, you know?
I hear you.
But as I was right, I was like voice to texting this because you taught me about that. Now we're both grandpas.
Mm-hmm.
And I typed in Megan notes and it changed it to Megan notes. So I don't know how to feel about that.
I know how I feel about it. Not great.
Anyway, so that speaks out. Paige was extremely thorough to the point that she used 10 sources. And then I looked up all the sources. Those were like the 10 sources on the story.
Oh, wow. Look
this
at you.
Like not a well-covered story at all.
Wow. Thank you, Paige.
I know. And so it's kind of cool because I love like the smaller cases that nobody has ever heard of. So there were no podcasts on this. There was no YouTube on this. Like there was nothing. So Paige had already used a lot of the information online. So anyway, I found a few things Paige. To add, Kate. But... Here's the thing. You're a treasure, Paige. Thank you for your help, for bringing this story to light. It is fascinating, and I'm going to tell it to you now. So, this story takes place in East Liverpool, Ohio, in the 1970s.
Is that near you? Is that near Cincinnati?
No, I don't believe so. Well, I don't think so. I've never heard of it.
Okay.
And it said it was in a county I've also never heard of, so I imagine it's probably at least several hours away. But then again, I don't know too much about geography in general, as this really shocking for you to learn, I'm sure.
Oh, gosh. Maybe.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, God. Oh, darn. Oh my goodness. Oh, my gosh.
So, East Liverpool, Ohio. Not really sure where that is, but apparently it was a quiet... Oh, you know what? I did look this up. I remember now. It was near Pittsburgh, so it was, like, on the eastern side of Ohio, and I'm on the western side of Ohio. In the 1970s, it was a quiet riverside town and the former pottery capital of the world. I'm sure you know that.
Wow. If I didn't before...
You won't forget
shame on
now.
Me. Shame on me.
At the time, this took place in 1973, the population of the town was about 20,000. And amazingly, their Wikipedia page says nothing about this murder, which I thought was pretty strange.
Well, it's still a small enough town that they knew how to cover it up, apparently.
Right? I was like amazed because there's information about all their pottery, but not about their murders.
Their pottery must be pretty freaking good then.
Maybe it really is just so good. It glazes over the murders. Lynn, I'm sorry. Stop listening here. I hope you stopped listening a long time ago. However, it was the final resting place of famous bank robber Pretty Boy Floyd, who was taken there to be embalmed. So that's my fun fact about the town.
Interesting.
And Paige is from there. So, yay.
Okay, Paige.
So, here's the murder, okay? July 30th, 1973, a nurse from Chicago named Frances Dugan decides to enter the local furniture store in East Liverpool to do some shopping. The store was owned by a man named Earl A. Tweed. He was a 75-year-old local of East Liverpool who owned the furniture store. It was called National Furniture Store, and he had owned and operated it himself since 1912. And his name is Mr. Tweed, which is just like the most 75-year-old man name I've ever heard. He also owned 8 or 9 low-rent apartments in town. He was a member of his choir and his men's Sunday school class. He earned honors in Eagles Lodge. He belonged to Masonic Orders and the Moose Lodge.
Ugh, fellow moose.
Yep. Anyway, he was known as, like, the town's, like, kind elderly gentleman.
Which is wild, because that's how I want to be seen before I go.
Like, oh, I know.
I mean, we all know how I feel about Nature Cozy, but I really do hope to retire in, like, a wonderful little mountain cabin space where, like, everyone in my community knows me as, like, the kind old man.
I will say, don't commit too soon to being this character. Maybe, like, divert now.
I want to be a version of what I already know and nothing else.
Fate.
Okay.
Let's just put it that way.
I want to just be known as wonderful and like an actual pillar of the community, and that's it.
Yikes. Careful with those words.
Not a killer of the community, a pillar of the community.
So Earl A. Tweed is this like kindly old man. He owns a furniture store. Anyway, and he owned some apartments in town, and as Paige put in her notes, he was always willing to help struggling families, like, with their furniture, their groceries. He even let his tenants skip rent if they needed time to catch up. Like, he was...
What a kind man.
Just a really kindly gentleman. So, anyway, this nurse from Chicago, Frances, enters the store to do some shopping and is immediately met with a horrible, bloody sight.
Oh, no.
She sees the body of a young woman and a child laying on the floor of the furniture store only 30 feet from the entrance.
Oh, my God.
So, obviously, she sees this. She runs out of the store. She shouts to someone across the street, call the police. Something terrible has happened. Police come quickly, and Frances waited at the store to give her statement. And for whatever goddamn reason, her husband, Daniel, had stayed in the car the whole time because his leg hurt.
Okay. Well.
Right?
Sounds like something I would do.
It said a leg problem, but Paige said he's just an asshole. But so, like, this woman literally just said, I found this child murdered. And he's like, I'm just going to wait in the car, honey.
He was literally like, I want nothing to do with that.
I know.
I want nothing to do with it.
He's like, ah, can we just go back to Chicago? You took me to this weird town in Ohio. I didn't ask for this. So when police entered the store, they see the bodies of Linda Morris, age 22, and her daughter, Angela Lynn Morris, only age 4. They had been beaten to death and were bloodied. Linda was declared dead at the scene, but Angela was still alive and was transported to East Liverpool City Hospital, where she died from her injuries only 10 hours later. But that wasn't all they found. So they kept wandering farther into the store. Apparently the store was like packed with furniture and antiques. It was like, you know, like a local antique store. Like, they had to kind of go back through all the furniture. About 4 feet from the basement stairway in the back of the store, police found the body of Mr. Tweed lying in a dim hall near the bathroom. He had been beaten and stabbed 27 times in the chest.
Oh, my God.
And then nearby on his chair were some pieces of meat and bread where he was preparing his sandwich for lunch. It's just like the most fucking tragic scene to stumble upon. Turns out Linda was also pregnant.
Oh, no.
So that makes 4 people involved in this mass murder. Wow. I mean, I guess it's considered a triple homicide, but she was pregnant, which just makes it sadder. Let's put it that way.
Right.
So the store was a friggin' mess. Police found a serrated steak knife that had been used to stab Tweed.
Oh, shit.
Yikes.
Sorry, I have nothing else to say except, oh, shit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. usually that's pretty accurate response, for pretty appropriate response. Although another source apparently says he was beaten with a hammer and then stabbed with some carpet shears that were later found in a garbage can near the store. So,
wow, that sounds like 5 different horrible ways to die all at once.
It's like Clue.
Oh my God.
It's like Clue, but just like,
it's like Clue, but no locations, wins. Just weapons.
Just nobody wins. We all lose.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially him.
Especially these people really who actually died.
Wow.
So they also found a wrench and a claw, a literal wrench, like this fucking Clue game.
Okay, it is Clue then.
They also found a wrench and a claw hammer, which they believe were the weapons used to beat Linda and Angela to death.
Shit. And they weren't like associated with him at all. They just happened to be in the same store.
They just happened to be shopping.
Like collateral damage, some might say.
Yep, exactly. Great. They were just shopping there. So, of course, it's a tiny town. News travels fast. Linda's mother-in-law, Letty Morris, was shopping nearby when she heard of the murders. And she actually, this is heartbreaking, she knew that Linda and her granddaughter, Angela, were going to the furniture store that day. So she hears a woman and her child have been murdered. And she's like, oh my fucking God, they were going to the store. And she's like desperately hoping, obviously, it's not them. So she races to the scene, is like, please tell me that's not my daughter and granddaughter. And the officer's like, well, they were wearing these clothes. And she just like broke down and was like, that's Linda and Angela.
Oh my gosh.
And Linda was only 22, keep in mind. Shit. Like, they were very young. Linda's husband, Lou, was at work nearby starting a new job. And he was also told about the deaths pretty quickly and was taken to the hospital. As far as the investigation, Columbiana County is where it is. I maybe near Columbus?
Columbiana?
I don't know.
Interesting.
The Columbiana County Sheriff and local detectives took on the case along with four men from the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigation, a.k.a. the BCI. They conducted a thorough search of the store and Dresden Avenue, which is the street it was on. They collected more than 24 items, which were checked for fingerprints, blood analysis, hair evidence, and other clues. The murder literally happened in the middle of the day in a busy area, but nobody saw anything. Like, there were no witnesses who could be like, oh, I saw a man go that way, or...
Interesting. And there's no security cameras or anything?
I mean, it's 1970.
Oh, right, right, right. No. I keep thinking it's, like, recent.
No.
Okay, got it.
I don't think so. Unless this was, like, the most high-tech...
Unless it was, like, a spy station. Right, got it.
Police determined that the last person who saw Mr. Tweed alive was a man named Charles Inman, who did part-time work for him and visited him that morning, leaving around 11:30, but he didn't seem to fit the bill. There was one young boy who was walking in the area and said a man had run from the store, bumped into him, grabbed him, demanded to know where he lived, and when the boy didn't answer, the man ordered to tell him where he lived or I'll kill you. I don't know why this would help a murderer. I really don't.
I can't think of a reason.
Like, did I miss it? I don't know. Maybe.
Tell me where you live or I'll kill you.
To a small child? I don't know. Maybe like to hide out there? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But that still didn't really
I don't
make
know.
Sense.
I don't know.
So the kid apparently managed to twist loose and run away. Which was like, what a little badass. I would have been like,
I know,
okay,
I would have just,
tell you
I would have literally turned into a puddle. I would have been like, I'm already dead. I'm clearly already dead.
I would have been like, I don't know where I live anymore.
I'm not alive, but I'm not dead. I'm pre-dead. I'm pre-dead.
I'm pre-dead. Aren't we all?
Uh-huh.
Just yeah. Anyway. So the kid just apparently ripped loose from the guy and ran. And he described him as a red-haired man. That's about it. They kind of created like a composite sketch and circulated it throughout the region. Members of the detective department flew to an Ohio city to a different Ohio city to quiz a suspect who was kind of charged in a similar case and who fit this like red hair description, but nothing came of it. It wasn't the right guy. Police also talked to a man who lived in a house owned by Tweed that was located behind the store. And this man said he had heard nothing. So it was during lunch hour, obviously, like, well, not obviously, but like during midday. And he said he had heard nothing. He saw no one leave through the basement door, which apparently hadn't been opened for a long time. There was a high window, like, in the store that was open, but...
Like a Skylar space? Or
a Skylar! Oh, Skylar, I hope you never have to bear witness to anything that tragic.
He's like, I listen to your podcast live every week.
I listen to your podcast and all the shit that happens like, outside
of
the podcast.
You have no right asking me to not experience anything tragic.
Okay, you're so right, then. I take it all back.
Skylar must be like a chain smoker at this point. Just...
Skylar must be in therapy. Oh, God. I probably owe you some therapy. I'm sorry, Skylar. So this window was open, but apparently it was open during the summer because it was hot. So that like didn't mean anything.
Yeah. It doesn't give you any information.
No. So later in the afternoon, a telephone call to police reported that there were papers strewn about on outdoor steps and along the freeway fence a block from the furniture store. And patrolman Jim Buckley went to find the papers, and they belonged to Mr. Tweed. And his wallet was there, too.
So it's implied at this point that this guy was camping out at Tweed's house, right? That's what
no.
It sounds like. It sounds to me like all of his stuff is there, so...
Well, along the freeway?
I mean, I would, I, without knowing anything, I would think that this guy was staying at Tweed's house and like just like taking his stuff and now I don't know what, throwing it around. I don't know.
Wait, I'm confused. I'm sorry.
I don't know. Keep going. I think I.
Well, they found his paperwork and his wallet on the side of the freeway.
Yeah, I feel like someone was like threw it out of his car or something. Or
right.
I don't know.
Where does his house come in from this?
I imagine they found the stuff at his house and he was, oh, they were staying no, at
I
his mean, house.
I think
and
they robbed him of it at the store. Like,
oh, okay.
They took his wallet.
Oh, right. Cause he was dead at the store. Yes. Okay. That
okay,
makes more sorry. Sense.
Okay. I get, okay. I think that was the disconnect here. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was murdered in the store.
Yeah. That yeah. I knew. I decided in the middle that you were wrong and he just died in his house.
Sure. Okay. I mean, away from listen, you. I could be, who knows? but also that would mean Paige is wrong and I don't want to accuse her of that. So. So, right, they found a block from the furniture store. They found his wallet.
Mm-hmm. Okay, nice.
Okay. So they went and picked it up. The money was gone. So it was believed that, obviously, this was a robbery. It was believed the man then ran through a vacant lot that was kind of attached to the store toward the freeway. And that's where he, like, tossed the shit he didn't want, like the empty wallet, the papers he didn't want, whatever.
Got it.
So police surmised that Mrs. Morris and her little girl were killed because they just happened, like you said, collateral damage, which is so fucking tragic, happened on the robbery and like maybe could identify who it was, and so he killed them for
that.
He
just like didn't want any witnesses.
Exactly. And they were pretty much helpless. So Mr. Tweed himself, he was apparently described as like a pretty tough guy. He had been through the Depression and had obviously run his business through the Depression, which I'm sure was like
the hardest thing on earth.
Right. Like quite a task. But again, he was 75, so he probably could not have fought off like a strong attacker.
Right.
And then, of course, there's Linda's husband, Lou, described Linda. Why am I so confused with their names? Sorry. There's Linda, Angela is the daughter, and uh-huh. then Lou is the husband. So Lou described Linda as a friendly and old-fashioned country girl who stood 5 feet tall and weighed 110 pounds at the most.
So she's super tiny. She's not
super
defending
tiny.
Herself.
And was 22, probably trying to protect her 4-year-old, was also pregnant. Right. I mean, they were just in a terrible...
The most vulnerable triple you can think of.
Exactly. So apparently the Fraternal Order of Police of East Liverpool and Wellsville jointly offered a $500 reward at the time, but it has never been collected. It's been 46 years and the case remains unsolved. The case was obviously, one could say botched. I don't want to say botched, but like in today's standards, it was botched. As in, people could walk into the crime scene, you know. Like,
right. Like contaminated in some way.
Exactly. And like things that matter today didn't exist. DNA was not a thing that they were probably
Security cameras. How did any crime ever get solved without today's technology?
Honest to God, I think about that a lot because I'm
how did anything get done?
How could you prove that someone, and you think about the witch hunts and stuff and it's like, they literally just made shit up.
They're literally like, well, I don't like her. Oh,
it's like
right.
A popularity
none of us
contest.
Do. Yeah.
Right. It's like, I would have been killed instantly.
Oh,
we
yeah,
would have been
the second
so
I was
fast.
Born, they would have been like, throw it in the river.
Throw it in the... God damn it. Oh, this one's a bad one. Yeah.
We can smell it.
Oh. What was it? I can smell a rat before I smell the incense.
Yeah.
That's
one
of my favorite new quotes, by the way. Yeah, so I don't know either, because nowadays, like, you have to be so... There has to be, like... I mean, not necessarily.
Well, like, that's like, it's like the John Mulaney bit when he's like, in the old days, like two cops would show up and be like, ew, there's a pile of blood. Mop it up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, now back to my hunch. Like,
or they'd be like, here, we're charging $5 to come see this fucking crime
right,
scene.
Right.
Like, steal the raisins off this pie. I mean, God.
Oh, yeah. That was a fucked up story.
Right? Like, I just think
like,
about
just
that.
Eating the cake that they had baked before they got murdered.
Shocker. That one's unsolved too, which I'm actually kind of amazed. I'm like, at least they didn't charge someone. Not knowing who it was.
Right,
like,
right.
I don't know which is worse. I mean, I guess putting an innocent person in jail is worse, obviously.
Yeah.
But so, okay. Compromising evidence. In 2010, a local photographer released a documentary called 759 Dresden, which is an address of the furniture store. Now, I swear to God, I cannot find this goddamn documentary. And, it was shown locally and aired on a local TV station, but it was never released on DVD, never released online.
Huh.
It is nowhere unless somebody put it on a VHS who had public access in East Liverpool.
Interesting.
So I like could not find any of it. There were like a couple bits of footage I found on YouTube but like not the whole movie. So that was kind of a bummer. But they did have interviews with people who were close to the events. They even had like archival footage in this documentary. They interviewed Mr. Tweed's daughter, which is really sad. And then Lou, who was Linda's husband and Angela's father. And it also talks about some other apparently 20 unsolved murders in this same county. So yikes.
Mm.
Anyway, Lou, the husband, says in the film that the East Liverpool police had been overwhelmed by the case because they weren't accustomed to such mayhem, which
Wow.
I feel like makes sense in a small town. You suddenly have this like violent triple
murder. Yeah, I can't
imagine
us like a tiny town just all of a sudden having this massive like coverage and then being like, well, I don't know what to do.
I feel like that probably still happens today when like in a small town something crazy happens.
Like, I don't know.
Like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Like, typically I'm following drunk teens around trying to send them home. I don't know. Apparently another triple homicide happened 6 years later in the same fucking town. So I don't know what's going on there, but Paige, be careful. God. So Mr. Morris, Lou, went on to marry again after his wife's death. He had 5 children.
Wow.
But it's just so tragic that the first...
His first daughter died.
Yeah, and the baby.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He spent 27 years actually as a police officer in Michigan. And in hindsight, this is interesting, he was puzzled as to why authorities never questioned him or any other relatives about his wife's murder.
Yeah.
Right? Is that wild?
Like, I mean, it sounds kind of incriminating, but...
Well, no, he was like, they literally never... I mean, he's a police officer. He's like, they never fucking interviewed me, and like...
I know, but it sounds a little, like... It sounds... I know. Yeah, I agree.
I actually thought it sounded the opposite, because I was like, if I never got interviewed, I'd be like, fucking zip it. Like, I'm not going to point attention to the
That's
fact
true.
That no one ever asked me anything.
But it is weird, because you would usually think the first person would be the spouse.
Well, that's what he said. He was like, well, usually, like, the husband did it, you know? That's kind of, like, the cliche.
Maybe it was such a small town, they, like, just knew he would never do it. I don't know.
Maybe, but even he was like, it was really weird. They never interviewed us. Because, I mean, maybe not even as the suspect, but maybe like, do you know anyone who could have hurt them?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, nothing.
Just for information. Anyway, so it's just weird. Anyway, Lou passed away in August of 2010 in West Virginia, St. Mary's.
Wow, West Virginia. That's basically Virginia to some people.
Oh, I got confused.
Did you really?
Yeah.
You've got to be kidding me.
West Virginia, wrong state.
You said it in a way like, how about that? And I was like, yeah.
I literally like tapped you like, good for you.
That's like me being like, and it happened in Kentucky. And you're like, okay.
I'm 10 minutes away. You would be more right than I am, to be fair.
West Virginia is like 2 or 3 hours away from me.
Yeah, my bad. I think it's actually like 2 or 3 hours away from me. So maybe.
Oh, maybe that's our meetup point next time we're home.
Some John Denver, make a little cabin cozy, nature cozy. Let's just move there. And
what are the odds that our meetup spot is the epitome of nature cozy?
It makes a lot of sense.
Listen, I'm just saying.
And also in the middle of nowhere.
It's exactly where I want to be.
Yes. So he passed away just 3 months before the release of the documentary, which is really sad. And he was interviewed in the documentary. So he was only 63 years old. This part actually made me cry a little bit. His second wife, who he had the 5 children with, arranged for his ashes to be buried in Spring Grove Cemetery in East Liverpool next to his first wife, daughter, and unborn child.
Oh, that's tough. That's tough. And also, it's very sweet, but also very sad.
I know, but it's like just so heartbreaking. And also just the fact that she knew how important that was to like bring him back to his first family is just like the most...
So sad.
Anyway. So Mr. Tweed's daughter... who at the time of the documentary was 72 and living outside of Cambridge, Ohio. Also don't know where that is. I need to get better at my... Whoops. Said police never questioned her either. And it was her father's store, her family's store, her father's murder. Never asked her a goddamn question.
Weird.
About...
Maybe even the killer's like, I can't believe they didn't fucking interview me. Like,
seriously.
Oh my God. Like, maybe they just never interviewed anyone. He's like, that was too easy.
He's like, damn. And then it had to happen again 6 years later.
Testing it. He was like, maybe this time they'll interview me.
I love this triple murder habit I've got going on.
Right.
So she was actually in her 30s the time it happened. So, I mean, she would have been the perfect person to interview and ask about maybe the store, like if they had any enemies, like, I don't know. But current officers can't speak to the specifics of who was or was not interviewed because the case is actually still open. But apparently a review of the old file showed that police did hundreds of interviews. Okay, I forgot about this. Of potential suspects and witnesses. So not just suspects, but like they did hundreds of interviews, but somehow skipped
the most important people.
Right. Just kind of skipped a circle outward, I guess. Obviously, there were, it is still also shocking that there happened to be no friggin' witnesses when this happened, like, in the main road of this town on a busy day, like, lunch hour. I mean, the nurse walked, Frances walked in, like, right after this happened.
Right.
People were out shopping, you know, it wasn't like,
wow,
this person waited till closing to rob the store. It was, like, just in the middle of broad daylight, but yet nobody saw anything, and he fled on foot, presumably. Somebody said, a retired police officer named Dave Mumaw said he would have had to have been covered with blood. So, like, the fact that no one seemed to spot in this small town.
Yeah, unless he, like, brought a jacket or something. But even then, like,
a giant parka.
It's just, like, fucking
the middle of August. It's like, right. Don't mind
but
me.
But then that would be something weird, too. Like, that guy was in a jacket probably covering
it's
up
probably
blood.
Probably even weirder than walking around covered in blood.
Right.
He also said, I've also felt that the person lived in that area and knew the area, which probably maybe explains, like, how they got away so quickly without being seen. Like, maybe they knew how to escape through an alley.
I have no idea.
Not everyone believes a killer could be a local. Obviously, like, on the other hand of that, like, it makes sense that it could be a local because it's like, oh, they knew the store, they knew how to get away. But at the same time, like, it's such a small town that everyone knows everyone, and, like, it must be so hard to keep a secret like that, that no one would ever be suspicious that you came home in a giant parka one day and
right.
My roommate was acting really weird. And also, it's hard to believe, I guess, too, this is actually Paige's point, it's hard to believe that someone like your neighbor could be capable of, like, murdering an old man, a pregnant woman, and a child.
Yeah.
So it's like nobody was, like, pointing fingers in town. Like, just very baffling, basically, the whole thing. Some people think that the suspect was just passing through, or that it could have been a serial killer, which I feel like often happens to be, like, just a...
Like a throwaway excuse.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
must be a serial killer that we don't know and apparently don't care enough about.
Just lump him in with all the others. But another retired officer says in the documentary that an out-of-town robber would have been more likely to hold up the gas station down the street than a small used furniture store, which is a very interesting point. Right? Like, why would you go rob, like, this random furniture store when you could rob, like, a more...
Lucrative
place. I don't know.
No, I guess that does make sense. Yeah, I wouldn't peg a furniture store as, like, the place with the most
especially
money.
Especially, like, an antique used furniture. It wasn't, like...
Right, like, a place with seemingly probably makes less money than other storefronts near it.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I could imagine is, like, because he's an old man, maybe easy to take
and he was
over.
Vulnerable, which would make me think that they knew the owner.
Yeah, but then you'd think that they would have done it when there weren't people in the shop, you know? This makes no sense. Anyway.
It sounds like it was his lunch break. Maybe they thought he'd close for lunch.
Oh, maybe.
So then maybe it was just random that there were two people there, but they were hoping no one would
be
there.
But do you think that they went to kill him or just rob the store?
I would imagine just rob the store. Like, it's not like a 75-year-old man is going to, like, do too much damage to you for the most part, but I guess they were...
But the fact that he was stabbed 27 times?
It sounds really personal.
Like, overkill, you know?
Yeah, literal overkill.
But, like, I'm with you. It, like, the robbery makes no sense, but it's also, like, why the fuck?
But 27 times sounds personal, unless you are maybe not... Maybe if it was someone passing through and they weren't obviously mentally well for committing murder, but maybe, like, to have that much violence and passion for no reason, you know?
And then maybe it was a serial killer, who knows? I mean, I don't know, but that seems just so random. Apparently, like, people who knew Mr. Tweed also knew he was known to carry cash, usually at least $200, so maybe it was someone who knew him and knew, hey, this guy tends to carry cash on him. I could just go in and easily... So maybe they were trying to rob him personally, like, I want your wallet, maybe he fought back, I don't know.
I don't know.
Who knows? I'm going to solve it right now, actually.
It sounds like you're on it.
We're not leaving.
You're on the case, hot to trot.
Oh, I wish. Mr. Mumaw, so the detective, said the secret could be, quote, locked up in a family, which sounds like the best movie title. Like,
locked up in a family?
Like a family secret that no one has shared. Oh, I see. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like the people who know it are like just members of a family. But he thinks by now someone would have said something. So... perhaps not, but he does believe the killer by now is dead. That's his theory.
Sure, it was like 40 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. Yeah,
50 years ago.
I think 50. You're
now
right.
It's
2020. It's almost 50. God damn.
The 70s were 50 years ago.
Yikes.
How? I wasn't even here for the 70s, and it doesn't feel like 50 years ago.
I know. It's not good.
People born in the 70s were like, were they in high school when I was born? That checks out, right?
It depends on when.
But like they were near like high school, college age, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And now 50. Wow.
Yikes. Anyway, the So the daughter of Mr. Tweed says in the documentary, quote, "I can't imagine somebody doing that kind of thing, that much violence, and then going on and living a completely normal life after that. That kind of person is going to continue with that kind of behavior." She says she tries not to dwell on what happened all those years ago and would like to see the crime solved, but she's kept some distance. She's kept some distance from a local group, Columbiana County Families of Homicide Victims, and the vigils they've held for murder victims.
Oh.
She says, "You have to pick up and move on with your life after something like this. Otherwise, it takes over the rest of your life."
Yikes.
And that is the story of the Tweed Morris triple murder.
Wow.
Thank you, Paige, for literally helping me discover this.
For being our, like, research assistant for the day.
Honestly, like, the sources are all here. Like, it's unbelievable. One of them is called ghosting12.com, so that's fun.
Oh, wow.
But every time I would search for it and I would, like, find an article, I'd be like, oh, shit, she already did it. However, I did find a new article.
Oh, okay. You did good, too, Christine.
I did, too. I tried. Also, like, I gotta check. Can you imagine someone sends me this whole story and then I read it and everyone's like, "That none of that is true." Or you just, someone's suing you now because you just, like, accused
Please don't
someone,
sue us. We're trying really hard over here.
Murder. No, somebody wrote an article in June of 2016 because I guess there was this, I had actually heard about this. There was a man who died by suicide in an East Lake apartment in 2002. And it was discovered that he had been living under the stolen identity of an 8-year-old boy who died
what?
In 1945. Have you heard about this?
No.
So I'd heard, like, briefly about it. And so this author, or the author of this article on pressurelife.com, the article is called "The Curious Case of the Unknown Man, Part 2. And at first he had tried to link John Doe, this guy, because he had this assumed identity for his whole life. And so they were trying to figure out who he was. So at first this author, Adam, he said he was trying to link him to the Zodiac Killer because it was like the same region, but that didn't.
Interesting.
Yeah, that didn't pan out. But so his next theory was that maybe it was the killer of the Tweed Morris triple murders. That was his theory. Then I read this whole article going, wow, that's amazing. Oh my God, it could really be. And then I was like, didn't they? Hold on. And I Googled the guy, and in 2018, they figured out who he was, and it was actually a man named Joseph Newton Chandler III. So,
oh wow.
I guess it could have been the murderer, maybe. I didn't, there's nowhere saying that Joseph Newton Chandler III was not the murderer, I guess.
Well,
but there hasn't been any proof since then that he was the guy, but maybe.
Well,
but look, even his Wikipedia says that he could possibly have been on the run after committing one or more violent crimes. Some people did believe he was the Zodiac Killer, though that was never confirmed.
What a fun theory. I like how everyone is possibly the Zodiac Killer.
Honestly, it's going to be,
like,
sad.
It might be me.
When we figure it out, and then we're like, oh.
You could really tie anyone to one part of it and be like, oh yeah, that's them.
Ted Cruz.
1,000%. Yeah. 1,000%.
However, it also says he could very well have been, like, a Nazi official hiding out, which... hiding out for war crimes, obviously. And apparently they're following a potential link to the unsolved 1989 murder of Amy Mihaljevic. So maybe,
all right.
Maybe I'll have to cover that. Anyway, so he was in the area. Maybe that is him. Maybe Adam's right. I don't know. But it's just a potential. Speaking of Nazi officer or Nazi officials hiding out, if you have not watched The Devil Next Door, it's probably my favorite docuseries I've ever watched in my whole life. I keep telling people that, but like, I don't think
Super
I've
good.
Ever watched a documentary that good in my whole life. So, anyway.
It's always a gamble when a German says, speaking of, you know, Nazi war crimes.
I try to keep sound bites like that out of the podcast so people
can't.
No,
this time you really got my eyes wide open there.
Yeah, you know, keep you on your toes, but, like, I don't need anyone clipping clips of me and throwing them out there, you know. But
sure.
Speaking of slander. But anyway, so that's the story. And thank you, Paige, for sending that in. I, like, stumbled upon it completely randomly. And then I was like, Ohio. And then I was like, unsolved. And here we are.
All right.
So
thank you, Paige.
Thank
and
you,
thank
Paige.
You, everyone, for listening.
Thank you, everyone.
And if you want to hear more about what Lin-Manuel Miranda is going to be writing about.
We'll probably be doing a live stream with him soon, so yeah, you can check that out.
If we ever got him on the show, that would be bananas.
Let's do it. Okay, I'm sure he has some ghost stories.
Everyone, let's manifest that like right now. Okay.
Can we figure out if Lin-Manuel Miranda has ghost stories, and then please can he come on our show to tell them? Because that would be so fun.
So at least enough people tweet about us to him so he knows who we are, and then maybe he'll hear the episode where we just like vouch that he'll do a Broadway show off of my story.
But in a really normal way. Don't be like...
But like, be cool. Have it organically happen.
I mean, I love you, but you've almost gotten me reblocked by Zach Bagans a number of times. So like, watch
like,
it.
We'll have to start making like on a spectrum from like Lin-Manuel Miranda to Zach Bagans. We would like to be in the good graces.
Yeah, let's keep it
up here. We'll have to stay near Lin this time. Okay. All right. Thanks, I guess. And
that's
why
we
drink.
Buy tickets to our shows.
Bye.
Whether you're making the same breakfast that you have every day or baking a cake for an extra special day, eggs are a staple in our diets. Eggland's Best eggs are nutritionally superior to ordinary eggs, containing more vitamins and 25% less saturated fat. Not only are they better for you, but Eggland's Best eggs taste better too. There's a reason that they're America's number one eggs. Visit egglandsbest.com for additional information and delicious recipes.